lessons that could be learned from Ferguson, in my opinion, is just that to realize that racism is still very much so a part of American society, and that people need to understand its effects on the black community and not necessarily just accuse black people of having a better wife syndrome, but actually realize and look at what it is and the things that are there. And also, we also have to take another approach and also take a look and reflect on ourselves as black people. What are we doing? Like, what are we what are we really doing to improve our own situation? And part of that is because of racism. It's the reason why we can't pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. It's the solutions to what we face is not just one. We have to pose a hybrid of solutions in different areas, in different pockets of the country, in order to uplift us. And like you were saying, you said that the captain in Ferguson, he looks like the people that live in Ferguson. And if we take that down on a smaller scale and take it to education, where most of our black children, they see white teachers. And that's before the city's, before the residency requirements. So just imagine what it's going to look like then. And that translates into when they get older and they see white cops in front of their faces, like the white teachers they saw in their faces that didn't understand them then, and these white cops that don't understand them now. So, I mean, that's a part of the problem. But it's a difficult thing talking about race and what are the solutions and what we can do to bring ourselves up. But I say one of the things is that we need to come together as black people, and also that socioeconomic portion of it. If we can just get black, yellow, brown, green people that's poor together and really do something about the establishment that's working against us and really see it, that's kind of almost like keeping us divided in a way of saying like, okay, black people are poor and white people are poor, but we still have this racial difference, so they're not going to team up to get together and galvanize against the establishment. We got Mexicans over here or Hispanic people over here that don't necessarily want to come around black people or don't necessarily want to come around white people, so let's keep them separated and let's not get them to the point where they say, you know, one common thing that we share with each other is the fact that we don't have anything. And if we can get that portion right, I mean, I don't know how to do it. Because that's a huge number, like 98% of the country versus the 1% when you got dealing with money like that. But if we can understand that in different communities around the country and see that our differences aren't really that much and that our similarities of being poor and not having anything is what needs to bind us, then maybe we can do something.
You had something to say.
You hit it exactly on the head. Time magazine recently ran an article, I don't know if y'all read it, that the next race war is not going to be about race. This is a class war. It is. Race has been long used as a tool, particularly in this country, to keep people who are on the bottom and who are being exploited divided. And it is a very effective tool.
It is.
So, you know, I understand what you're saying, Keith, about, you know, center my community. You can center your community. I am black, first and foremost. I am a black woman. And when I talk about, you know, issues of class and things, I am an intersectional socialist. Because for me, race, class, and gender are all, when I walk in the room, all of those walk in the room with me at the same time. I'm not just black. I'm not just a woman. And I'm not just oppressed. I am all three of those things at the same time, all the time. Mm-hmm. So when I approach issues, I am looking at them from the perspective of race, class, and gender. And this is a war on poor people in this country. This is not just started, and it will take, as you are saying, Amante. I center my community because I believe that policies that are good for black folks are good for all folks, as far as everyone needs healthy environment. Everyone needs functioning public schools that do what they're needing to do. Everyone needs transit access that is affordable and does what it is supposed to do. Everyone needs living wage work. These are things that unite communities regardless of race. And I can speak to those things centering my community, but they also benefit other communities that we do need to stand together. We are stronger together. And also speaking to residency, if you have people, it isn't just a matter of a person's skin color. I had white teachers that I absolutely loved, that loved me. I had ones that sucked. So, I mean, I'm just going to call it what it is. But, I mean, it's also the mindset that if you are someone that is not invested in the community that you serve, you are not invested, particularly in law enforcement, and invested in and have an understanding of the people that you are serving and see them as yourself. If you are not bringing that mindset with you, when you come in from the suburbs with this us and them mindset and you are in a position of authority, I'm sorry, you are in a position to abuse that authority because it is a those people issue. Our folks in the suburbs are not looking at people in the inner city, particularly of Milwaukee, and saying, that's my other me. That's me. I'm not looking at myself. And media is a huge part of that. It is those people. It is not a universal experience that, hey, these folks are experiencing high crime because things are being taken from them, just like things are being taken from me too. No, it is those people, and they deserve to be kicked. And we have to get away from that mindset, both in the city and in the suburbs, if we are going to move forward.
Go ahead.
I just was going to make a point, kind of drawing together what you were saying, Angela, with Keith had earlier mentioned, like, the white lie of feeling like, you know, if I just work hard enough, I can pull myself up, and that not being the case, because you go out and find out, you know, some of these people really didn't work hard and that it's inherited wealth or whatever, what have you. And George Carlin said, it's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. And I think that there's something poignant Amante, when you're talking about the establishment, like, there is a system in place in which race and class are inextricably tied, mm-hmm. which is intentionally designed to keep poor communities and people of color doing the hard work that they do every day for the profit of the wealthy. And that's why I say that it is relevant to say, you know, when we talk about corporate CEOs making 300 times what their workers make, that is relevant to our communities because it's part of the system that's put in place. And we've even also in this circle today talked about the media's role in that. And I think that's a very real part of the campaign to keep the system in place. So I think I just think we're touching on some good things in terms of economy and
establishment. It's like the establishment knows how to use race as a distraction. And it distracts the people. It uses it as a distraction to distract people at the bottom from the larger issue, which is we don't got none.
So,
we don't have anything.
So here's a question, right? And here's a novel idea. Uh-oh. Playing devil's advocate. So we talk about the establishment, and we talk about people who don't have anything, right? Mm-hmm. But we see people who don't have anything with an iPhone, mm-hmm. right? So the question is, why go buy that iPhone and pay, I don't know, $100 a month with a data plan when you could go, and that's not to say you don't have a cell phone, right? But when you could go do something else with it. So we're talking about this establishment, and we may talk about CEOs who make, I don't know, 300,000 more, 1.2 million, whatever, right? So the thing is, they're making that because you're giving them your money.
My opinion on that would be that in capitalism, we measure success by money. And so basically what success looks like is being monetarily and materially wealthy. So if my idea as a member of any community is to be successful, I have to have an iPhone, a PlayStation, Jordans, and a nice car. No matter what community you come from, if that's the message that you are inundated with from the time you come into the world, because our system tells us that's how success is measured, that's how you know you've made it, if you have this stuff, then whatever I can do to, you know, to acquire those things is part of playing into and participating in capitalism.
But if that's the case, then can you blame the establishment if you don't have anything?
Because I guess I
don't follow.
Because you're in essence, you're saying, okay, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to take my money and I'm going to give it to you. So if that's the case and you feel as though you don't have anything, can you blame the establishment?
Give it to you, you mean give it back to corporations?
Exactly.
Does anyone else want to speak?
It's a more psychological problem. Like you said, it's about being born into a system that shows that having material possessions is what, even though if I don't feel like I got nothing, even if I feel like I cannot afford this, I'm going to get it because the people around me will see me as something I'm not.
Yes.
And that'll boost me up. And maybe it'll boost my self-esteem up, but not really. Just me presenting myself as somebody I'm really not.
Amante, I will say this, though. I agree with you. Latoya, I think you bring up an excellent point playing
Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate. I will say this, that those are when... To me, it's important, at least for the African-American community, to say, listen, we have to begin to build our values and principles within our community. Yes. I don't, an iPhone or a new car or new Jordans or some new rims, that's not. In other words, there are communities that do this in this country where they say, I don't care what is on television. This is what we go by. Mm-hmm. And they are successful at doing that. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand that the legacy of slavery and of racism has ripped that away from us. In other words, we didn't come here on our own and have our own language, even our own religion. And so a lot of the institutions that would build a community over decades, over centuries, we lost. At the same time, I still think we have to have it inside ourselves and say, listen, we have to begin to teach our own principles and values, and this is what's important. And I also want to say, let's take this out a little bit further. When it comes to the money, I don't get me wrong, Claire, I definitely agree with you, but we in America, we're the 1% of the world.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at my brothers and sisters over in these third world countries, I mean, living off less than a dollar a day and we complaining because we didn't get the latest iPhone. Yep. I'm sorry. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, listen, man, you talking about people dying. I mean, I'm sure you guys may have heard about this several decades ago. It was actually a photographer who actually killed himself after taking a photo. An Ethiopian little kid was dying. There was a vulture right there waiting for him to die. That's a whole different type of reality than us getting mad because we didn't get our new weave on the first of the month. It's just a whole different reality for us to get upset about what things we don't have compared to the rest of the world. Not just, but the rest of the world. So I think it'd be helpful if we can show some of our African-American brothers and sisters. Let me tell you, so some people are really struggling. Where they out there on the street for real, but yet they still believe in the values of education. They still believe in the values of family. We have to me, that's important. We have to begin to show that there's some folks who are really struggling in this world.
Well, and two, I mean, it kind of ties back to community and taking responsibility. We talk about the fact that these communities don't have any walkable good food sources. So how are these communities supporting local businesses so that the money, again, stays in the community. People make money whether they're, sweeping the porch or going around and cutting lawns. I mean, how are you cycling that money and taking responsibility? And I still come back to the economic development. And, I really think that's the answer.
I think one of the things I had spoken to Toy at on a different issue a while ago, and that, so we have an incarceration rate where you come back to the community and you can't get a job because you're a felon. Depending on your felony, you can't get certain jobs. I'm still working on a. I probably shouldn't put it out there because I know it's gone once I do. I'm working on a plan and an outline where when you get out of jail, there are only certain jobs that you can do. We all know that. We pretend, but cutting grass, snow removal, cleaning lots, painting a building, things of that nature. Why not set up a program where when you get out, you go through maybe 2 or 3 months of small business training, and you create a micro, which I'm actually working on, to see if I can legally create a venture capital just for small business. So if you want more than $1,000, don't come call me. But set it up so that when you get out, I set you up with training, then I set you up with a business plan, then I set you up with equipment, and I give you a territory. So you have 3, 4, 5 blocks. Because I know if I can get 10 people every month to cut their grass, and you pay me $25, $50, whatever, $100 a month, that's $1,000 a month, instant,
right,
that I can live off of. Well, if I've been hustling my whole life, I'm a salesman. I might get $200, $300. You know, I may make $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month doing manual labor. Now I've got a history. I can build my credit. 10 years later, my felony didn't seem so bad. 5 years later, and move forward. We need specific solutions to the economic problem.
I will say, Tracy and Ken, I think you're absolutely right when it comes to that. I will say, and I know you guys have felt about this, but I will say, I think the other lie that's told is this education thing. Education, don't get me wrong, I think it's important. I think it's a valuable tool. But from my perspective, and I deal with this as an executive director of a business improvement district. Someone, hey, I work with a lot of brothers and sisters. Hey, man, I want to start this business. I want to do this and blah, blah, blah. So just do it. Man, I want to start a barbecue joint. Man, go get the grill and start today. Start selling your, there's nothing to stop you, man. I want to, you know, I'm thinking about opening up a grocery store. Do it. Don't even, this idea that you have to go get, I want to get this degree and I got to get this learning. No, there's so many from all, you know, we can go around and share the story from Oprah Winfrey, Tyler Perry, Bill Gates. They just did it. We have to begin to encourage our brothers and sisters and say, just do it. All this fooling around, waiting for some money to drop. No, just I'm going. I just heard about the lady who started Spanx. $5,000 now, it's a $2 billion company. I'm like, you just do it. Just don't. Let's stop waiting on some savers, starting waiting us to win the lottery. If you're going to start a paint company, go for it. City got all type of contracts that if you begin to just start doing your work, start building building your base up, start building references and start building infrastructure, there's work, there's money to be had in this country.
But it's about that system. We've formalized education to the point that when we call it education, there has to be a certified teacher. There has to be this. There has to be that. In your thing about public education, all education needs to be that way. I have no problem with choice. I have no problem with charter. And I have no problem with public school, as long as it's good and it's quality. After that, your politics are your politics. That's fine. You can argue and complain. But in the end, you might want to be a garage mechanic. So you need to do MATC. Or you may need to get ASC certified. And that's it. That's your education. We formalized it to the point of, well, I don't know, if I don't have a bachelor's degree in it, then I can't start a burger joint. Really?
Well, and also,
that makes sense.
And also when we talk about access, and I don't know how strong those barriers are physically. Do you have access to that education? Do you have access to that small business loan? Because there's so many organizations, and maybe because they're so fragmented, that access seems insurmountable. But there are so many organizations that are raising money, venture capital funds, that are just looking for a great idea.
Right.
And then you start to say all these organizations that are raising money to just focus on developing these communities. You know, is it the communication within these communities that they just don't know this exists, and how do we get at that?
I will, and Tracy, that's a good point. I'm thinking about this. I will say that America has been able to, specifically with the African American community, sell us just about anything. When we can market to a man, he's ready to buy, spend $250 on a pair of shoes before he spends it on his child. America, sometimes we can have a twisted way of materialism, and we do it really well. And I say that only to say this, that if we can market to the African American community to go to the chicken place, to go spend this and do that. We can market. Listen, if this is what you want to do to make your community better, you know, education is important. Family is important. Faith is important. They are important. Statistically, it's been proven that these things, and somehow we have to get in our head because first thing people say, well, it doesn't make money. Well, I drive into work and I see a message all the time about no texting while driving. Now, because it's everybody issue, it's important. So yeah, we got to talk about it. But if I went on the billboards and I haven't seen a billboard about fatherhood or a commercial about fatherhood in a very long time, and if that's the issue the black community, and I tell, here's my test. Go around this table, or even the listeners, and say, listen, what do you think are the top five issues in the black community that we're dealing with? And then, right after you write them down, go around and where do you see that message being dealt with? You won't see it.
But
you will not, whether it's education? Where's the educational commercials? Right. Is it fatherhood? Right. Is it family? Is it poverty? What tools do we need as African-American community to make ourselves better? But because it's not an everybody issue, it's not being addressed. And that bothers me.
But then let's turn it around and show, let's have those five top successes that we have too. We spend so much time looking at what's negative in our community. Mm-hmm. You know, the 100 Black Men, of which I'm a president of the Milwaukee chapter, they have a slogan that what they see is what they'll be. Mm-hmm. We don't show that. We don't show families. Mm-hmm. We don't show positive anything. Mm-hmm. All we do is complain. Look at what's wrong. You're absolutely right, but it's that algebraic equation again. Now let's show the other side. This is what's right, and let me show you what you need to do to get it.
But under this, under capitalism, you're not going to see, you know, ideas about, you know, building family and, you know, things that don't necessarily generate profit because it's not sexy.
But that's not their job. That's our job.
And I'm getting to that. Yeah. When you were talking about establishing standards, you are absolutely right. Our community, for the longest time, has been under the assumption that we have to accept standards that have been imposed on us for the last 500 years. No, we need to go back to where we were in setting our own standard and rejecting things that are not good for us and rejecting, and one of those things, and questioning capitalism. I'm sorry. I mean, you have, when people lack class analysis as such, and are not looking deep into, you know, why is it important for me to have, right. I'm a person who doesn't own a car, a couch, or a television. I have no furniture. Some people may look at that as, you know, you come to my house and it's like, oh my goodness, I have a lot of books. That's what I have. I consider myself pretty all right. But my thing, you know, I understand class analysis. I'm able to say, you know, I'm not going to give you my money. Because you are not doing anything for my community, because you exploit us, because you're a vampire. I'm not giving you my money. But a lot of people who base their self-worth and the worth of their community on what we have, which is what we have been taught to do in a racist capitalist society, we've internalized that. Mm-hmm. And we are the people who are least in a position to live that way. But we lack a class analysis, a lot of us, because we're not taught that.
What do you mean by class analysis?
To say that you are being exploited by materialism and capitalism are tools of exploitation. You are being exploited under that system. You are a commodity under that system. Your existence is to buy commodities.
But then don't you make the decision yourself to buy that or don't buy it?
It comes down
to an individual.
It does, but you have to understand that that structure is in place before you can make that decision. If you don't understand the way that capitalism works or see a problem with a capitalist system, then you're not going to question that. I do.
So then what do we make it then?
It'll
what do
be
we change
a,
to?
Under you can work for the good of people under a capitalist system. You can do that. While advocating for its overthrow. But I'm going to leave that alone.
Nah, I don't know if that's true.
One thing that always questioned me, and I just read an article about this, was the check and go. And when we talk about capitalism and we talk about the check and go places, is that something that these communities want? Or is it something that they reject? And if they reject them, then don't go there and cash your checks and pay 1,000% interest. And so... And if they choose not to build there, if they choose to pull out of that community, don't get up in arms because of that. And so I just don't know what the real story is, especially in light of this conversation.
I will say, Tracy, for me, I think, and I'm a little bit different from Angela, we're here. This is a capitalistic society. Let's make the best of it. That's how I feel. I'm not going to, no longer will I say I don't want to be a part of this game knowing that my brothers and sisters continue to die. And that's, I'm not saying to take the wrong with you. I think you have some excellent ideas. I think when it comes to African-American community, I will say this. Community is important. Family is important. We have some things that are just amazing as far as the people, despite all the things we've been through. With that being said, though, I want to be able to empower the African-American community and the individuals in the African-American community. Say, listen, work hard. You can get what you want. Work hard. You can send your kids to decent schools. Work. It's just – It's just how it is. And people say, well, don't get me wrong, go back to that lie that, well, you work really hard, you don't get it. That's why you can have those values and family and structure in place to say, listen, this is what we spend our money on. This is what we don't spend our money on. Listen, it's more important for me to invest in your education than it is for me to get a new car, for me to spend a whole bunch of money on rent that I can't afford or clothes that I can't afford. We build those internal infrastructures so that way we can play the game that's been played for the past 400 years and say, listen, this is where I want to be. I want my kids to be too well taken care of. I want my legacy to have some meaning. A lot of my brothers and sisters that are dying, especially African-American males, there's no legacy there. They will be forgotten after they take down the memorial near the tree. And that's a sad fact. We need to empower them. So listen, you may not be able to get what your white counterpart get, and that's just the reality of it is in this country. At the same time, you have a better chance than any place in this entire world to build a better life for yourself. And I'd rather take that percentage than to say, oh, we can't do nothing and leave it alone. So I think there are things in place that we can decide to do. So listen, even if we just say, you know what, my children are important. My children are important. My children are important. You know, there's a lot of communities that come over here and say, immigrants, especially my Latino brothers and sisters, they come over here and they say, listen, my kids are important. My kids are important. And we know the facts. When I was at City Hall, you can see it. Certain Latino families will only stay inside low-income housing for a very short period of time. After that, they work hard, save up money, and they leave. That's not the issue with the black community. It's a problem because we say, okay, this is good enough for me, and we stay there for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. We have to get out of mindset to say, yes, I may not have it like other people, but it's going to be a lot better for the next generation, and I'm going to be the one to sacrifice. It amazes me that you had that one generation that was sacrificed. That one generation that will work hard and build up something. Don't get me wrong, the second and third generation will piss it off. I hope that's not too bad. But they will work hard. And I think we haven't been able to get that in the African-American community, say that one generation is going to sacrifice, not march, protest, and rally, but that's going to save money, that's going to invest money, that's going and then take. Now I'm going to pass the baton on to you. We just haven't seen that. It's not as strong. It's been attacked. It's been under attack for many years.
Lessons from Ferguson.
Couple things. Number one, going back to your reparations, my idea of reparations.
That's not a lesson from Ferguson.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because it's one of the things that's going to be able to help them. If you want to give reparations because of slavery, make it education. Set the bar and lock it in for 30 years. For 30 years, if your historical perspective, I think for our ancestry, is 37% from Africa because you've been so diluted over the years that you're considered African, find out what not tribe, but ethnicity you're from, and all that. And when you can prove it, then you get X amount of years of education tax-free. If I want to build the community and build my neighborhood, and if education and family is important, make that your reparation. Lock in the ACT and the SAT score so I can't go, well, you know, I didn't really have reparations, and I thought you could get in, but I know you needed a 20 on the ACT, but this year it's 21. No, we don't play that game. Lock it in. Lock it in for 30 years. Let's get two generations up and going. That way, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Samoan, Alaskan. Doesn't matter. This is what it's set at, and everybody has a shake. Then we can move it. Then if you want to go to MATC, or if you want to be an auto mechanic, if you want to be a PhD, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a teacher, it's locked in. We don't have any issues. It's the same for everybody. Okay, that was one. We have to remember that in Ferguson, we can't use a long-term solution for a short-term problem. You saw last night how many people were rioting. After a week and a couple days, it's maybe like 20 people, 30 people. Okay, well, what happened to the thousands? Well, being human happened. Over time, it's really not that important. But yet the governor calls out the National Guard and we got all this stuff going on. And it's like, really? You're going to use a hammer on a peanut? You know, you use hammers on nails. You know, so there was that disconnect of let them get it out of their system and then let's move to a positive solution. But then we have to remember you can't tear up your neighborhood because that's a long-term problem. Your problem is short-term. The grand jury is not going to be back tomorrow or next week. They don't even have all the evidence. It's not even in. So we're making long-term decisions based on information we don't have. We think we know what happened. Multiple agencies are investigating it. We don't have any information. You're not. It takes time to do a thorough investigation. And my thing is, if I want a thorough investigation for the the man or woman that's accused of shooting the cop, then I want the same thing for the cop that's accused of shooting the man. Because I want the same system to work for both. Because if it don't work for them, it's not going to work for me. Is it a good system? No, but it's the only one we have. And it's the best one in the world. So let's use it to our advantage. It is the best one in the world. We may not like it.
Most profitable one in the world.
Well, you know, you can say that, but then when you get in trouble, if you really feel that way, don't call 911, don't use the system, and if you're a victim of crime, don't report it. But that's not what's going to happen. That's not what's going to happen. You're going to call. So I say, let's make the system better. But yeah, but I get scared when I see two different sets of people treated differently.
Yeah, that's true.
I need everybody treated the same way. So when it's me on trial, or if it's somebody that looks like me on trial, they get the same time with a grand jury that they get. Mm-hmm. You don't get to hang me. I don't get to apply generalizations to somebody in law enforcement that I accuse whites in suburbs of doing against me. That's hypocrisy. You give them the same deference that you want. Give me the same laws that they have. But if I get locked up, you need to lock them up for the same thing. That's all.
In the same time.
That's all. But they have different resources. And Ferguson doesn't have resources.
So I want to get my just couple lessons learned. And I say this to say that I think this is how Milwaukee can become Ferguson. Just a couple few points. One, politically deaf politicians. I think that there's a number of politicians, some of them say, I'm looking at running for mayor. If they don't understand how to deal with the African-American community or other minority communities, and specifically the youth, we're setting us up for disaster. You got to have somebody that's connected with the community. Militarization of the police force, I know someone was going to get to that. It makes no sense to see what some, not the city of Milwaukee, but see what some of the other police forces in this country have. And if we don't address that problem, to me it was sad. And I have to admit sometimes my thinking, as you guys probably could tell, is a little more conservative. But to see a whole troop of my white brothers and sisters bearing down guns to some of those brothers and sisters of Ferguson, it was just an ugly picture. So that's the issue. Removal of the residency requirement. Y'all know how I feel about that. I think it's messed up. Hypersegregation in our community is a major issue. It's not for the sake of just the diversity and desegregate. It's the sake of making sure people understand each other and know where they come from and have some sense of community. I think that's important. Outlets for Youth, I mentioned we got some great programs. It's good that we have some great community organizations and other group nonprofits that are doing some things. We have to continue to do that. These youth, if we don't give them an outlet to expand that energy, they're going to be doing the things they did in Ferguson. And then two more things, can't point on it, media. Media is a major issue in this country. We have to deal with something where every time a black man does something, it's just like, oh my goodness. I don't know if my white brothers and sisters have this, but when I watch the news, I say, I hope this wasn't the brother that did this. Yes, because it's almost like, man, because they paint, and like I said, it's underlying racism, because once one brother do it, all brothers are associated with it. Oh, black man did this, black man, and that doesn't happen. You just don't hear that. Other communities, it's an individual thing. When a white man does something, it's that particular white man. It's not reflective of the whole entire community. That needs to change. That bothers me. The media crap bothers me. The last thing, the last thing I want to say is that this is where we take ownership, absence of black parents. Yep. I'm sorry. There's too many black parents that will let the streets raise their children. When I'm coming home at 7, 8 o'clock at night from work and I'm seeing kids that are 5, 6, and 7 and older just hanging out with no direction, how dare we talk about racism and we getting beat up, and then I go to other communities, they dropping their kids off to soccer practice. They taking them to violin lessons. They're involved because they know within a certain time frame that you have to give that child every chance they can get so they can make it in this world. And people, I know some people will say, well, they're working hard or they're doing this. It does not matter. You got with that person to have that child, raise a child. Don't put that responsibility on nobody else. It bothers me when I hear, when I was at City Hall, your people, my kid can't eat, feed him. My kid can't do this. My kid, you brought this kid in this world. Don't do that. I'm not a parent, but if I was a parent, I could never, ever do that. Bring a child in this world and just let them be. And because, the world is so difficult, it makes no sense. We have to have more value in our children and say, listen, if I bring anybody in this world, I don't care if I got to sweep the kitchen floors for the rest of my life. My child's going to have a better life. And if we don't have it inside of us, we can't talk about nobody else. Okay, I'm done.
The issue of the visual, the military being called in, that really caused agitation. And I think Milwaukee, do not do that. you know, and I've seen some of the responses right now from the protests that were happening over the weekend and the rioting that was going over the weekend. And I think it's appropriate. They're saying, let these people riot, let them be peaceful. And I think for the most part, that's the right approach. You know, I think what's happening is that because the riots and the actions and the looting have nothing to do with what actually happened, we're having this negative perception, and the media is playing this out. So when I look at the media and I see these people rioting and looting, what am I supposed to think? And I think, what are the other communities supposed to think? They're giving us an excuse to have a negative perception. And perception, unfortunately, becomes reality. And I think that's a huge problem that we can learn from. The other thing that really strikes me is that if we're going to get excited about a white police officer shooting a black man, I think we also need to say, how are we going to get excited when a black person shoots another black person? And let's refocus our energy, not saying we need to riot, but let's focus our energy and let's rally around that. And let's have the same amount of attention paid to that, because it's happening much more often than what we see in Ferguson.
Angela, Claire?
You want to go?
No, go on ahead.
Speaking to black on black crime, I'm just going to put this out there. It is a statistical fact that most crimes are committed by between people of the same race. Right. The reason that what's happening in inner city neighborhoods is heinous and it's painful, but it isn't any different than what is happening in suburbs with white people victimizing one another. We just get more bad press for it because, hey, black people and naturally inherently criminal. So let's get on.
What about the concentration of it, though? I mean, it seems as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it happens more often in inner cities than it does in suburban areas.
I have to defend her on that one. Actually, what it is that we just report it more.
Okay. Thank you.
So when there's a homicide and then there's a trial and we report the homicide, then we report the trial, then we report. It all looks like that's all the same thing, or the media doesn't go in depth enough to separate the two crimes or the two instances.
Okay.
So in their mind, I count the trial as one. I count the incident as two. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I see five instances of something, I count it as five, when in fact it's all the same. You know, it was a homicide, then there was an investigation, and then there was an arrest, and then there's a trial, and then there's a conviction. So many, many times, if I watch the news, not every day, I turn on to, oh, wow, look, there's a shooting. I turn it on again Thursday. Oh, look, there's a trial. And in my mind, that's two different things. But in fact, it was the same person.
And I really hate to interrupt you. We're going to come back to you. But so are you telling me that there are not more instances of homicides and shootings in the city of Milwaukee than there are in the city of Waukesha?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that as a country, we show, oh, look, there's another shooting in Milwaukee. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, look, there's another shooting in Chicago. Oh, that's terrible. In the time that they were rioting for the first 8 days, there were 8 shootings and 2 homicides in Milwaukee, if I count right. But I haven't seen it on the news. Have you? Why is that? When is that going to be important? But if the media can find a white guy, and I think they would have done the same thing if a black cop had shot a white kid. They'd have blown it up. Oh, it's a race. Well, wait a minute. Why is that life in Ferguson more important than lives here in the inner city of Milwaukee?
I would say, Toya, that I'm on the opposite end of that. I do believe, from my limited internet research, that there are African-Americans, there are some categories that we do overrepresent, and I think it's important, going along the lines of Tracy, life is life. And don't get me wrong, it is bad when the people that we say protect and serve do shoot. But, I mean, it's sad to see what's happening in Chicago and what's happening, frankly, in parts of my city of Milwaukee. Life is life. I don't like the fact that we get excited when it's another race. That bothers me because it's like, no, man, this is a brother too that died. He was a father. He was a brother. He was an uncle. He was somebody's son. He was a cousin. Life is life. Let's don't get it twisted that, oh, because a white man is involved now, it's more important. Oh, I think that's a legacy that's slavery and racism that Claire was talking about, in my opinion.
I think that what happened in Ferguson also just highlights the fact that we are not in this country as far advanced in race relations as we need to be. How many unarmed black men were killed the same week that Michael Brown was killed? Mm-hmm. Four. Unarmed. This is not new. This is a pervasive problem from one end of this country to the other. And it is not just black men. It is black women. Ayanna Jones was 7 years old when she was murdered in her sleep by police. We have a problem with the way law enforcement is applied in this country, which is why I say it's not the best system in the world. I understand it's the one we've got, and it's better than a whole lot of.
You're absolutely right.
Lord, we got a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. Take the color blinders off, because it is alive and well here as far as the way that it works in this country. We have got to, and what you were saying about applying equal justice, people in Ferguson are angry for the same reason that anyone who's been following Dontre Hamilton or Corey Stingley or Bo Morrison, we have a problem with black people being seen as inherently violent and criminal, and therefore I am justified in my murder of these people. That is the message. And we have had it. And the black hand that pulls a trigger on a black person is no less culpable than someone white who does it. We live in a very violent culture. And that's one thing that we don't like to talk about, but the whole world looks at us as barbarians because you have to go to Target with an AK-47 strapped to your back. When is that okay? We have a gun problem in this country. We have a problem with violence in this country. And we have a problem with racism in this country. And what you're seeing in Ferguson is the manifestation of all of those things. It will take us to be honest about this country's systemic racism and the way that black people are portrayed in the media and in popular thought, and to say we are all people and embrace our diversities instead of, you know, seeing difference as weakness. And to be able to look at one another and say, yeah, you're not me. You don't come from my community. We don't think the same way, but you're still a person. And I value you as I value myself. And when we can come together that way and build and, you know, tell the folks that are controlling the images that we get that we see through you, we're not buying it, we're not playing this game with you anymore, then I think we'll be okay.
My lessons from Ferguson quickly are, within the capitalist system, property is often valued over black life. So there was a lot in the media about looting and rioting and white businesses being broken into. And it was all detraction from the death of Michael Brown. And then just the fact that this is also happening in Milwaukee. When we think about the death of Michael Brown, here in Milwaukee, we've lost Derek Williams, James Perry, Dontre Hamilton. So we're under an illusion if we think that this isn't the case in Milwaukee, and I think that outrage is warranted. I agree with Angela that there's a time for rebellion and for outrage. And then I think that the system is not working for us. So like Amante talked about the establishment and kind of touching on that, I think capitalism is the worst system in the world because it commodifies people and treats them as products. I ultimately think it won't work out for us. And then just finally, from my perspective as an ally to the black community, listening is the root of justice, and that it's the place of white allies to the black community to listen first and to look to the black community for direction about how to help what's happening.